Hey folks, welcome to Lethal Mullet Podcast live here now on, of course, the Facebook channel itself, of course, Facebook page of Lethal Mullet Podcast. You can find, of course, us on all socials at The Lethal Mullet. And tonight, episode number 224, we're going to be looking at Steven Seagal's, I think, personally best film from his early run, from all the way from Above the Law, Hard to Kill, and then to this, Mark for Death. Of course, there was also Out for Justice and then Under Siege, which we'll be covering in episode number 225 down the line. But tonight, yeah, we're going to look at what really made, I think, personally, these first few films fantastic. I haven't really gotten into any of the stuff post, probably, I would say, On Deadly Ground as much. Fire Down Below, probably, you know, a little bit of that was pretty good as far as, you know, the budgets were getting smaller. And I do believe, too, just the style of the filming and all that sort of stuff wasn't quite what these bigger budget ones, particularly at this stage, you know, the action was still pretty good. Yes, there's a lot of Aikido and stuff, which I think, you know, one of the, you know, the great things that Steven Seagal had done at this period was really bring in that fantastic, real introduction to what Aikido can be like. And for a lot of us that are martial artists today that went into the world of Aikido, it's thanks to watching these films. So, hey, welcome to the show. And as we said, we're doing a lot more video now, folks. I'm the host here, of course, of Lethal Mullet Podcast, Adam O'Brien. And we're going to be looking at a lot of the action cinema that we haven't covered in the three or so years that we've been running this podcast. So we're going to be looking at some different stuff. A lot of it is going to be, you know, stuff that you've asked for as listeners. And, you know, we're definitely going to look at films that were the gold standard for the stars that were in it at the time, or at least the leads that were action stars that may have gone on to now B-grade films or television or whatever it is. One of those today, of course, is Steven Seagal. And he certainly is doing not the same sort of budgeted films these days, and they certainly aren't the same quality that we're back here. You know, and you've only got to look at Mark for Death, a great example of what can be done with a good budget and, you know, really working to the strengths of the characters that Steven Seagal portrays. That and, of course, the other one we're going to be covering next episode, Under Siege, which is pretty much the, you know, it was the film which a lot of us got into watching his stuff from. VHS obviously was a big thing at the time, and ate it all up, obviously. Above the Law, I actually saw on TV first. It was on WWE Channel 9 one night, and, you know, I was flicking through, and I knew of Steven Seagal being, you know, somebody, you know, kid that was interested in martial arts and that was doing karate at the time, Shotokan karate. And then I saw, you know, Seagal, fairly tall guy, throwing people around a dojo like it was nothing. You know, and it was what got me was the little effort that it took to really throw somebody quite far or do arm locks, arm bars, all that sort of stuff, the grappling that's involved in that style. And, you know, it's quite a bit different than the Aikido that's taught in the dojos. What we're seeing is more likely the pre-war Aikido, or where Aikido comes from, which is Aiki Jiu-Jitsu or Daito Ryu, most likely. Which again is more a battlefield style of jiu-jitsu from the old days, before the feudal era, thereabouts. But it, in a sense, is very cinematic, and that's why, you know, you get to see some, you know, great shots of the stuntmen going through, you know, glass tables in this movie in particular. We get to see some great work and some sword work in this too, when we see, of course, his character. John Hatcher. I love all the names. They did Mason Storm, John Hatcher, Casey Raback. Ah, Casey Raback, how you doing? Yeah, so a lot of these great titles, you know, John Hatcher. What's great about it is that it's pretty much still what he's doing today in these Z-grade films. But, you know, in the heyday, and this first came out, and, you know, we didn't know a lot about Aikido in the mainstream. We didn't know a lot about, obviously, you know, what Seagal was going to give to us on screen. And that's what we're talking about today. We're not talking about so much what Seagal is doing now in film or whatever he's doing. But we are looking at that period that really got people interested in this martial art. And certainly I did too. And, you know, I just took to it and did several years of Aikido. What I loved about it was, I think the camaraderie that you, it's a different feel in the dojos, you know, Aikido than karate or Muay Thai or judo, all that sort of stuff. Although there's a lot of people that were doing judo and jiu-jitsu and even Shotokan karate that would gravitate towards Aikido. And it comes down to a number of the principles, which we'll talk about a little bit later, that I think people get to it for. And I mean, there's the added benefits of learning some pretty rudimentary sword kata and jo, which is, of course, the 4-foot Japanese staff. Not to be confused with the 6-foot one. It is the yonshaku bow, so smaller bow. And, you know, it is definitely a different style of stick work than what he's done in Okinawa. But anyway, we'll talk about that. And, of course, a lot of knife and gun disarms that we see him do in these ones as well. A lot of him not getting hit is the other thing. One thing I've noticed about Seagal's early films, and even probably to this day, he never gets hit. So, you know, that's one thing that I do like about the other action stars is you get to see them, you know, be the underdog, if you like. You know, they get beaten up a little bit, but they come back. And that's classic Rocky-style action, just like Sylvester Stallone used to do and all that sort of stuff too. Before we get into the film today, let's chat about where you can find this show and many others like it in the audio form. You can find it here. You see, here you go. Follow the finger. www.fpnet.podbean.com. Yes, the channel has moved back to its home. That's right, Phantom Podcast Network. Big hello to, of course, Kevin and Carl Wagner. Kevin, that's Kevin Reitzel, I should say, and Carl Wagner, the co-founders of that fantastic channel over there. And, of course, the guys that got us started doing this fantastic podcast and looking at all the films that, you know, people have forgotten about or still want to talk about. Particularly, this is a film that's off talking about, you know, a number of times. You know, it's been definitely one that I've brought up a number of times to be, I think, personally, the best of Seagal stuff because it kind of breaks away from the basic Seagal mold a little bit and it's a bit more of a thriller. It's still got plenty of Aikido and, you know, a lot of there's some characters in it too. Keith David's in this as well. Joanne Pakula. We've also got, who else we got? We'll go into that very soon anyway, but let's just say some great actors in this. But also, I think that's what really worked back here, and it's the same to be said with the stars, the alpha male stars, if you like, of the late 80s and the early 90s. It was all about the great actors that were surrounding them. And because, let's face it, they weren't great actors, the leads we're talking about here. But when you've got great people around them, fantastic actors playing villains, you know, it forces people like Arnold Schwarzenegger to act. You know, he's not going to do Shakespeare, you know, come on, you know, Hamlet, do it now, even though they did it in, what was it, Last Action Hero for a little bit. but what's great is we get to see them pushed a little bit and they can play off great actors. And it's in a lot of that. I mean, they had some fantastic talent, even in, you know, something like Last Action Hero as well. To the likes of even Bruce Willis and, of course, Die Hard with Alan Rickman. I mean, Rickman's such a fantastic actor, you know, it ups the game of everybody else. The same can be said in a lot of these films too. And let's just say Screwface as a villain in this is amazing. And the twist, which we'll talk about soon. For those that haven't seen it, I won't spoil it just yet. So I'll let you know when we talk about plot and when we go into that very, very soon. So you can catch, of course, us on all the social platforms on at The Lethal Mullet. Currently, we're only really posting on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram with the shows and stuff like that too. So you can catch up little snippets that we put on there to give you a little bit of an idea what's coming up. And particularly for those pals, particularly in the martial arts community, they've been asking for things like the perfect weapon to chat about, even though we've done it before. Yeah, we did it before, folks. 2020. Of course, we're going to talk about the perfect weapon. Lee Fillingsness goes. And, you know, that's just what happens. Of course, we had to talk about it. So I think that's what's really, you know, getting to that point where you have to really up the game of martial arts chat and have great talents and guests. So that, you know, Lee in particular, got to, you know, really say just how an amazing pal he is, but also a good buddy when it comes to chatting about martial arts, and somebody that has studied the same style of Aikido as well. That's right. Well, similar style anyway. But big shout out to Lee Fillings, this one of our pals who's on, of course, Blood of Kings, a Highlander podcast, which is on FPN, this little bad boy right here. That's right. You go on fpn.com. Did I say that fast enough? And, of course, you'll find Blood of Kings over there. And Kevin the Raider Nerd writes, we haven't really done that right over there. Kevin the Raider Nerd writes all. And of course, Lee Fillingsness. There you go. That's how we introduce them, folks. We just do. But of course, with Lee doing similar styles, it's always great to have him on. So we will catch up with Lee when we can, because he's done, obviously, Aiki. He's done similar striking arts with similar forms than I've done as well. So it's great to have that sort of, you know, camaraderie. And you could just talk shop. And of course, we do a dojo segment, folks. So we definitely get into chatting about martial arts. If you're a martial artist, we always want to chat to, you know, again, we're all brothers in the arts. We might do different styles, you know, brothers and sisters, yes, what do you call it? Those that are out there training, you know, I love the idea that we all help each other out by motivation as well. And, you know, these films that we're watching now, these videos, these stars, what motivated us first to get our butts into the dojos and train and kick and do all the stretching and flexibility, all that sort of stuff, you know, and it's great to just get in there and actually do it again. So you got to say, at the end of the day, it is fantastic to still be doing and to chat to people like-minded. And Lee certainly takes the cake when it comes to it. So our salute to Lee. And, of course, well, Kevin the Raider Nerd Ridesel too when it comes to, of course, Blood of Kings. All right, so now that we've got into that, folks, we are going to head into, of course, chatting about this amazing film, Marked for Death, Steven Seagal's best, his third film, and certainly one that I think, you know, stretched his limited acting legs, let's face it. But he does pretty good in this. He plays off the actors not too bad, you know. I've got to give it to him. At least, you know, this is one of the films that, you know, you could rewatch and it's actually not too bad. As John Hatcher, and of course he's got a long list of things that he's already done. Why? Because he was always something like a CIA agent or FBI or whatever it is. He is a former DEA troubleshooter, somebody that they throw into somewhere to fix all the different stuff. But he comes home to Illinois, to his hometown, and of course has to fight Jamaican drug dealers. And of course they're all led by Screwface, this villain, which you know, I think is out of all of the people that Seagal's faced in, you know, whether it's Tommy Lee Jones in, of course, Under Siege or any of the others, this is one of the more interesting villains because there's a bit of mysticism to it, the way that the character is. There's a little bit of magic, if you like. And that's what I think makes for great cinema in this. It's actually interesting. It's interesting that they tried that. and it really works with, I think, you know, where they were heading as far as the story and stuff like the plot too. So obviously too, there's, you know, this posse that are basically trying to take over the town where they are in Illinois, and they're trying to take out all the competition, and Screwface is basically taking out all the other networks, the gangsters and stuff when it comes to, of course, them being the top drug dealers in the area. With this too, there's basically kind of a voodoo like religion in this that they're using as a kind of mystical thing. Or anything, it sort of drives the mysticism of who Screwface is and, you know, whether there's more to it. But again, it makes it interesting because I think the big part of it is that when the police are trying to find him, and even Steven Seagal's character, John Hatcher, tries to find him, once they think they've got him, well, maybe they don't, you know? So there's all that sort of stuff. Again, it's a quite an interesting plot for what it is to look at too. All right, so let's have a look at it. So John Hatcher is a decorated soldier and also a DEA agent with the Drug Enforcement Administration. And he returns all the way from Colombia, where drug dealers had killed off his partner, Chico. And from there, of course, John killed all the dealers. And, of course, from here, with the effects, of course, of his partner being killed and, you know, the years of work that he's had to put up with, he decides to end his career and retire and go back to, of course, a place in Chicago called Lincoln Heights. This is a suburb there where basically in Illinois, his family's got a place there too. He goes there to visit his family and from there goes to the local high school where, of course, he's got a buddy by the name of Max Keller. And this is where, of course, we meet up with the great Keith David. Now, what's great about it is that this with a particularly, I think, you know, where you've got somebody like Keith David, he always plays off leads quite well. I've loved his work, you know, all the way back to Platoon, Men at Work as well, which we, I've definitely chatted about a number of times how good that movie is. We've got to cover that too because it's got some great stars in it. If you like Young Guns, there's not just Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen in that one. There's also somebody else in it that's kind of an antagonist towards him, which is the same character you see from actors, I should say, from the one and only Young Guns, who calls the main bad guy a fat sow. That might give you a clue. So, yes, there's some crisscross over there too. We must be pals with, of course, Emilio too, who've got that role. Anyway, we'll talk about that a little bit later. So it's directed by Dwight H. Little, written by Michael Grace and Mark Victor, produced by Michael Grace, Steven Seagal and Mark Victor. It was shot cinematography by Rick Waite and music by James Newton Howard. There's a name we all know. And of course, distributed by 20th Century Fox. Came out in October 5, 1990, and on a budget of $12 million, it did $58 million. So one of the more successful films in his earlier part of the career here. So let's get back to the story. So Max Keller and catches up, obviously, with John Hatcher. They talk about old times and stuff like that too. But then as he's being a football coach on the field and a phys ed teacher, you can see some of the posse from the Jamaican gangs comes down and starts handing out drugs to the local people in the high school. As they see that, they start to edge towards it. And, of course, Hatcher pulls him back and says, don't get involved. Once you get involved, it's on. And obviously to worry about revenge if they did anything. So from here, that the Jamaican posse and all that get together at a club. And there is, of course, a gunfight breaking out there too. From here, this is where we get to see John start to do his Aikido and of course, some of his gun work too. There's one thing that's probably not said enough is that there's a lot of gun work in, you know, the films that Seagal's done. So, yes, he's obviously an Aikido instructor and aficionado of martial arts, but he's also quite skilled with firearms. You know, it's not quite on that John Wick sort of level, we're going to call it, which even if that's real, you know, all those fast reloads and stuff like that, I think it's a little bit of camera trickery and, of course, you know, wouldn't be done in the real world. I mean, come on. But at the same time, you know, it's interesting to see, you know, even back here with Mark for Death, you know, the firearms work of this is pretty realistic, I think, for what it is. But it is a movie nonetheless. So news, obviously, the posse crimes incurring all over Chicago and, of course, the United States gets back to the one and only man himself, which is, of course, Screwface. And so they start to see what's going on with, obviously, John Hatcher being kind of a thorn in the side of the operations too. So from here, John encounters a gangster by the name of Jimmy Fingers, who's, I do believe, an actor I've seen in at least one Seagal picture as well and a number of others too. So I have to look at the cast and see who that gentleman is. But from here too, he starts to get entangled with, of course, another group that are in there too with the Chicago Police Department, who are trying to figure out, is John coming out of retirement and trying to get in the middle of it? But of course, they're also trying to keep him at bay from here too. So from here, we get to see John and, of course, his friends also go overseas and start to hunt down Screwface himself. And from here, we get to see some great scenes where basically it's almost like MacGyver, or Seagal goes full MacGyver in a workshop. He's working on things like an M60, an MP5 with his homemade silencer and some type of laser sight, I think, if I remember right. Also a sniper rifle. And, you know, a number of those things, something that we get to see a little bit in Under Siege as well. So I think in some ways this may have influenced some of those scenes in Under Siege a little bit later on too. But when they go from there, they go to, of course, Kingston, Jamaica with this and basically do a little bit of a military hit, if you like, the way that they do it on that area too. From here, they believe that they've taken out Screwface. But when John, Max and Charles make their way back, this is where they find out that possibly it's not just Screwface. That's right. Because when he turns up, you know, they say, oh, Screwface isn't dead. It turns out Screwface had a twin brother, and that's how the operation was able to keep up that sort of, you know, mysticism, if you like, too. So with this too, obviously we have some great scenes, even the end fight between Screwface's twin brother and, of course, Or is it Screwface that does it? But, of course, the great way that it's sort of played off is really well. It's a bit of sword work in there, lots of Aikido. In this one, the Aikido is a little bit cleaner to watch than Above the Law and Hard to Kill. I think the way it was shot, the cameras pulled back maybe a little bit more. I mean, a lot of those moves, particularly the hand movements in the locks and throws, you know, they're so intricate and close quarter. They really need to project that out more just to see that as well. So anyway, we'll go into that in a little bit. But let's have a look at the cast now, folks. Now, we're not going to go into, you know, the life and times of Steven Seagal here. This is about the movies. So we're going to stick with the basics of what we know back here. And we're going to look at the rest of the cast as well, give everyone equal time here, because this is a great cast here, which you know. So obviously Seagal was at a time where he had moved on from teaching Aikido in the dojos. I think he still was doing a little bit, but he's concentrated in his career at this stage and obviously doing a great job by here. You know, obviously he had Alpha Justice after this, which, you know, a lot of people say is probably his actual best film. He's playing somebody in taking on gangsters and stuff like that too. And it's a real revenge movie, whereas this one's kind of same sort of ballpark, but it's different because it's, you know, it's set in Chicago and obviously Kingston, Jamaica as well. But the way that it sort of played out, it's played out really well. Like I think it's got a bit more epic nature to the actual film for what it is, you know, for something that was a VHS hit. Let's put it that way. But Seagal was going strong. Keith David is Max Keller. We've already talked about how good he is. He still did one of the best action films of the time. Of course, working for John Carpenter's in They Live, and it is a fantastic job that he did in that one too. We've also got Joanna Pacula playing Leslie DeVallos, who's DeVallos is basically a professor working for the people there too in this too. We've got Basil Wallace playing Screwface, and of course also plays the twin brother of Screwface, and he's really good in this. You know, it's, if anything, Screwface being such a great character really, I think, outshines all the other actors too. We've also got Tom Wright as Charles Marks in this. He's a detective who follows up with working with, of course, Max Keller and John Hatcher. Yeah, here's the big one, folks. Kevin Dunn. Yep, Kevin Dunn is in this movie. He's really good in this, actually, who is always, you know, playing that character that's sort of, you know, a bit of an antagonist, if you like, towards John Hatcher. But at the end of the day, he's starting to see, as his role as FBI agent Sal Roselli, what's going to happen down the lines. Highlander's Elizabeth Grayson. So a big shout out to Elizabeth, who's always fantastic. She plays Melissa Hatcher in this. Now, I think Well, the great thing is getting to know her work in Highlander. You know, I kind of think that, you know, known her stuff so much better now, having done, obviously, a rewatch of all of Highlander. And I think it was fantastic, so really good. Betty Ford plays Kate Hatcher. Danielle Harris plays Tracy Hatcher. We've also got Al Israel plays Tito Barco. Now, let's have a look at some of the others. Where Danny Trejo plays Hector, which I remember is at the start of the movie as well. Now, you've got Jimmy Cliff plays himself in this. We've also got Earl Bowen from the Terminator films plays Dr. Stein in this. There you go. It's pretty cool. And I can't remember ever I'd seen him in anything else apart from this and that, but he has. He obviously has been in a certain massive movie with James Cameron years and years and years before, which is great too. And that is, of course, Battle Beyond the Stars. So Steven Seagal had wanted to hire Dwight Little for Hard to Kill, but it looks like the studio, Warner Brothers at the time, which were working on that movie with him, said no. And so they went with a different director. So Seagal had the option to contract with Warner and do one more movie. But from there, too, they looked at, obviously, to where they were going to go with others as well. But, of course, from here, they went for Mark for Death and obviously came into it. The idea, the template for this was the French Connection, to that sort of feel of the French. And you could kind of see it. And definitely that sort of Chicago look kind of has it too, I guess, but as well. So we also got on the third day of this one, Hard to Kill had come out, and it was huge. You got to think, Hard to Kill was quite an interesting one because as an actor, yeah, he was really stepping up and where things were going to go, and particularly with Seagal, you know, Above the Law was all that people knew because that was out in the cinemas and where things were going to go. But what I think was fantastic is, particularly for, you know, with Hard to Kill, it had a great idea in the fact that somebody in a coma comes back after being left for dead and then, you know, fights his way back, if you like. That was a novel idea and something that, you know, particularly for a second film, bloody smart. I mean, it's a great idea. So it's great to see that where that's going to head. And obviously with this film, this was the logical next step for a great idea too. Now, the great thing about this one too is that, you know, we've got great things in this. We've got obviously great actors. We've got a great villain. We've got Aikido really being shown off here well, particularly on some of the chases when, you know, Seagal's throwing people all over the place and some great techniques. We're seeing everything from Kodagaishi. We're seeing Sunkyo. Ikkyo and Nikkyo being thrown out there too. Those that know the techniques, you know what I'm talking about. But also, we've got a great soundtrack too. There's a lot of hip-hop in this. There's obviously too reggae in this as well, but a lot of R&B too. And for 1990, it was, you know, it was pretty damn sweet. There was a really, really strong score and probably one of the better ones for Steven Seagal's films. This is definitely one that did, you know, really well out here in Australia. I remember this being on the top charts of the VHS stores. You know, it was number one, number two, number three, you know, and floating in and back on a lot of those shelves and Amiga Video and, of course, Video Easy, Civic Video. And later Blockbuster came in, obviously, to Australia. What's funny is we had it actually an earlier Blockbuster in Australia. A lot of people don't know that. but what's great about the film for me is just how it is given a chance to a martial art like, of course, Aikido, which doesn't have the best name in the martial arts world right now because I think it's often misunderstood. And, of course, it's more akin to Tai Chi in some people's minds, but it has practicality. It comes from a line of jiu-jitsu, and that's what I think Steven Seagal's idea was to put this on film that way too. And you can tell a lot of the stunt plays in these movies, and particularly this one, are students of his, so they're obviously working with that technique and stuff like that and being thrown the right ways and stuff like that too. It's pretty damn cool. So this film gets a 4 out of 5 on, of course, the Hallenbach scale here at the Lethal Muller podcast. Well, folks, I hope you go and check it out again. It's worth viewing. Out of all the Seagal's films, this is probably number one. Under Siege is a close second, but this is the one you need to see just how Aikido can look on screen when it's done right. Well, we'll catch you next time here on, of course, Lethal Mullet Podcast, episode number 225. I'm your host, Adam O'Brien. Check us out at fbnet.podbean.com and at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.